Welcome to The Right Chamber, the podcast that takes you inside the NHS to explore what really makes a hospital a hospital.
Each episode, we sit down with the people who keep healthcare moving, from doctors, nurses on the front line, to students, the support teams, administrators, corporate staff, and everyone in between. These are the voices that often go unheard, but together they form the heartbeat of our hospitals.
Our aim is simple: to share authentic stories that are accessible to the public, meaningful to NHS staff, and a reminder that healthcare is more than treatments and wards. It's a whole community working together.
So whether you're part of the NHS family or simply curious about the people behind the service, join us as we open the doors to the conversations that matter here in the Right Chamber.
Dr. Andrea Gate has been a consultant anaesthetist at Dudley since 2008. Over the past 4 years, she has played an active role in advancing sexual safety at work within the Trust, contributing to the Sexual Safety Charter Steering Group and supporting wider initiatives to improve workplace culture and safety. Dr. Maya Patel is an anaesthetics trainee working in the West Midlands. Since 2021, she has been actively involved in work addressing sexism in the NHS and is a member of the Sexual Safety Steering Group at Russell's Hall. She is committed to challenging unacceptable behaviour from staff and patients and is creating workplaces where people feel safe, respected and supported. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. My name is Victor.
And I'm Jaspreet. Welcome to the first of three episodes dedicated to addressing sexual safety in the NHS. These episodes will take us from understanding the problem to discussing the data and finally to outlining the actions being taken.
In this first episode, we are exploring what constitutes sexual harassment. We aim to recognise how it manifests in everyday workplace interactions, from subtle comments and banter to the influence of hierarchy and power dynamics.
Before we begin, we'd like to include a trigger warning. This episode discusses topics related to sexual harassment and inappropriate behaviour in the workplace, which some listeners may find distressing. Please take care while listening and feel free to skip this episode or take a break if you need to.
We'll be diving deep into definitions, exploring cultural factors, and discussing examples of subtle normalised behaviours that cross boundaries. We'll also examine how intent and impact can differ in this sensitive context.
And today we have our two very important guests, Maya Patel and Andrea Gate. Maya, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Maya. I'm CT4 anaesthetics. I've been in the West Mids for a really long time now. I first started getting involved in sort of sexual safety side of things a few years ago. And it was largely following Sarah Everard during COVID and the subsequent incidents with other women. And I found myself earlier this year just honestly tired of it at work and wanted to do something about it. So I approached a couple of the consultants in the department about trying to do a survey regarding sexual safety at work, and they pointed me towards Dr. Gate, who has already done this work. So very kindly, she's invited me along to the Sexual Safety Steering Group within the Trust, and now apparently I'm on a podcast.
Well, welcome. and Dr. Gate, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Andrea Gate. I'm a consultant anaesthetist. I've been a consultant at Dudley for 17 years now, and worked in various other areas of the country before coming here. How did I get involved in the sexual safety stuff? In many ways, similar to Maya, I've experienced over my career sexual harassment, sexual assault. I, on the back of the whole Me Too movement, and I think there was an article that came out in the Royal College of Surgeons, sexual safety at work, a painful truth, sexual assault, a painful truth, something like that. And that triggered a lot of discussion online and at work. And I think from there, I just thought very similar. This can't still be going on. You know, I've got a now 15-year-old daughter. I just want the world to move on from this. There's been a lot of high-profile stuff that, you know, that that I just think we need to be talking about it. And partly coming with seniority and a will to change. So I did the survey, which at the Trust, and I'm part of the Sexual Safety Steering Group at Dudley Group. And I've been doing a lot of work at this hospital about improving sexual safety at work. I'm a wellbeing champion, and I will be doing the training to be a Freedom to Speak Up champion as well at some point when I can get myself booked on a course.
So today we're here to talk about a very important topic, which is sexual harassment, right? So from the start, how would you define sexual harassment?
Well, there's a legal definition as described in the Equality Act from 2010, which defines sexual harassment as unwanted conduct of a sexual nature that has the purpose or effect of violating a person's dignity or creating an intimidating, hostile, humiliating or offensive environment. And this can include all sorts of things. This can include verbal comments. It can include written comments. It can include non-verbal behaviour, such as leering, displaying or sharing images, showing someone something on your phone, or unwelcome physical contact. But I think the important thing about it is that it acknowledges impact as well as intent.
And this is something that, you know, it's not just limited to kind of healthcare. That is a general understanding. But why do you think, you know, it is something it's sometimes misunderstood in the healthcare, you know, professional healthcare setting?
You are right. It's prevalent throughout all society. I think healthcare is an environment where we spend a lot of time together and we work at weird hours. We spend like night shifts together. In terms of interacting with colleagues and patients, we're often getting in each other's personal space. And I think that can, not blur boundaries, but create an environment where it might be more uncomfortable, more leaning towards or infringing upon those kind of boundaries.
And I think it's important to remember that a significant amount of proportion of the sexual harassment that takes place at work in the hospital environment, or, you know, in the medical environment, is from patients. And because we deal with patients who are sick, who are on drugs that they might have taken, we might have given them, they might be drunk, they might be have had a stroke or have Alzheimer's or some medical condition that causes them to be disinhibited, and also their families, and and it's a very stressful time. But we also get very close to patients. There's no concept of personal space. We have to get near them for examination, investigations, washing, all sorts of things. So it's a very, I think, unusual environment. And clearly sexual harassment is a problem in every environment, every workplace, but I think more so here because of all these reasons.
Absolutely. Compared to, like, you know, your typical office 9-to-5 job, and just as you've said, in healthcare settings, we're getting up close and personal with patients for their care, and it can make even the staff members, it can put us in a vulnerable position.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that's why sometimes it could be minimized, when it comes from like a patient perspective?
Minimized in terms of how it's perceived and dealt with?
Yes,
I think so. I think we all want to care and do the best for our patients, and we understand that it may be unintentional from a patient. It may not be, but it may be unintentional. And actually, you forgive a lot because of that, but that doesn't necessarily lessen the impact on an individual. If a nurse is washing a patient and the patient gropes the nurse, whilst she might understand it or he might understand it, it doesn't lessen the impact that it has on them. And that's a very difficult thing to rationalise in your head, I think.
Yeah, because they might think that, well, yes, I feel impacted, but this is the reason the patient's doing it. So I think that's very, very difficult when you are the
as a victim of the abuse.
Yeah, agreed.
And this is, you know, we've mentioned it can come from patients sometimes by no fault of their own. But then sometimes it is staff to staff as well. And sometimes they can crop up in quite subtle ways sometimes. I don't know. Do you have any examples of kind of subtle ways where someone might think, oh, that this counts as sexual harassment, or this, because, you know, it is a quite a straightforward definition, but I think people can still get it wrong.
Where they think, like, you know, lines are like blurry, or, you know, where whoever's getting the abuse is being questioned or feeling like they need to think about what they want to report. Like, is there any examples that where people might be like, well, you're overreacting?
So I think if you go back to the definition, it talks about both intent of the person doing it and the way that it's perceived, so the impact on them. And it also goes further into whether it's reasonable for this person to perceive what was done in that way or not. I think you've got to go on your gut feelings a lot of the time. If you feel uncomfortable, it's there for a reason. And that in itself is enough to report it. I know there's a lot of boundaries in reporting about whether anyone's going to believe you or take your side, or if it's your word against theirs. But I think if you are in a position where you felt uncomfortable, you should report it and you should be able to get the support that you need.
I think that's very important, because sometimes it's not even the person feeling uncomfortable. It could be someone else.
Absolutely.
Listening to this conversation, feeling uncomfortable. And I think they should have the right to report it because they feel uncomfortable about it. But I think in healthcare, it's a little bit, I feel like people get judged for reporting a lot. How's that?
And I think that's part of the problem. And often there's a power dynamic in that the person who is coming out with the banter, the, you know, a word which I very much dislike, but is very commonly used.
It's just banter.
It is just banter. Yeah, didn't mean anything by it. And actually, they, in some cases, I think know that that they're pushing it a bit close to the edge, and sometimes they don't, and that's just how they've always been. But I think that the power dynamic does make it very hard, because it is often a more senior person who is doing that, and a more junior person perhaps who feels the impact of it, whether it was, as you say, directed at them or not. And because of that power dynamic, it's a really difficult thing to speak up, because that senior person can affect you on a day-to-day basis. If you don't laugh along with everyone else, they can start ostracizing you. They could start, you know, you might not get the training opportunities. They'll ask someone who they see is in their circle to come and do this case, come and do this procedure or whatever. Or, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, they can affect your job prospects. If you wanted to work here and somebody who's senior in that department says, no, they're not going to fit in our team, that's going to have a big impact on your career. So, it is still quite endemic within the NHS, as many workplaces, I think, and particularly because you have this power dynamic. And then that's between your senior and junior doctors. And then you've got doctors and nurses and support staff and ancillary staff. So there's a lot of people who are affected by this power dynamic and therefore can be affected by.
Because imagine if you reported someone and the person that you're reporting to is friends with the person.
Which is quite likely.
They're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest reason. And like you said, the job opportunities, training opportunities, people are scared to think that, well, if I don't laugh along, if I don't say, well, yes, you know, to their banter, or, you know, just, you're not going to get that,
yeah,
that procedure that you've been waiting to get signed off.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's, that's very sad.
It is very sad.
Very sad.
Yeah, it's but it is, it does exist. Mm. I think, and I know we're going to talk in another episode about how you can report and ways to report, but I think the first, you know, I think addressing the culture is got to be key. In fact, I went to a training day yesterday for train the trainers for people to go into departments, into specific departments to address culture in departments. So hopefully we'll be seeing more of that because there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes. And I'm not sure how much it's getting out to people on the hospital floor, but we are doing an awful lot of work behind the scenes. So hopefully nothing's going to change overnight. This is the problem, isn't it? Nothing is going to change overnight, but there is a gradual change. And I see it from when I started. And, you know, it was the late 90s when I started as a junior doctor. So we're not talking 70s. We're not talking carry on, you know, time. But it is so different today to how it was then. And I think that incremental change, I really hope it'll carry on. But it is changing, even if slowly.
Yeah. And I think what you mentioned about just changing the culture is something that's very key, because as we have, you know, new junior doctors and even medical students who are very much on day-to-day ward rounds and treating with us, they watch us and they see what the culture is. And so it's that culture really needs to be defined as, this is what norm is, this is what good is, because if that norm is warped for them, then they just then carry on into the workforce. So as well as changing things for current workers, it's also important for those who are entering the system. So as you said, that year on year change is happening, but for the better, you know?
Yeah.
And just one other thing I wanted to latch on to was what you mentioned about impact of what they said, or intent. You know, someone, when we talk about sexual harassment, when we talk about things like banter, you know, the first excuse I think you'll hear people make a lot is, no, I didn't mean it in that way. Or, you know, she understands what I mean. But as you said, it might not even be the person you're talking to that this is impacting. So the consequence of what you do or say is actually the real thing that must be thought about here, not just your own intent. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's part of communication, isn't it? It's what you say and how it's received, and both parts are equally important. I think there was some work done recently at St. Ian Samuel, Middle and Met now, sorry, about banter, actually, because everyone throws the word around like it's an excuse to get away with things sometimes, right? And they had three parts there, little banter checklist about whether something is banter or not in the workplace. The first one is that everyone knows it's banter. So if everyone knows it is a joke, that is the first step. The second is that everyone finds it funny. So if someone doesn't find it funny and someone's offended by it, it is no longer banter. The third is that everyone feels safe in that environment. So even if you know it's banter, it is funny, but something's making me feel uncomfortable and I don't feel safe here anymore, it's no longer banter, and that's fine. So you have to meet all of those three criteria. I think the work that they did also looked into whether banter should be part of the workplace. And I'm not here to say that we're no longer allowed to have fun at work anymore. That's not the point. And I don't want anyone to feel like they need to really watch their words or they can't enjoy themselves at work. That's not the point. I think if you stick to those three things, you can still enjoy yourself. You can still get along with your colleagues. You can still have a laugh. You just don't need to make anyone feel unsafe at work. And that is the key part of it, right? No one comes to work to feel unsafe in something that they've trained to do and they want to do and they want to be here and help people. It's just creating an environment where we can do that to the best of our ability.
Mm.
I think the second part, where if everyone thinks it's a joke, then it's fine. But I think if there's that one person who doesn't,
yeah,
I think that's where the problem lies, because they'll be too scared to speak up,
yeah,
and say, mm, well, actually, I don't find that funny.
Yeah.
And then you are the
odd one.
The odd one. The, mm, yeah, you know, absolutely, not the fun person anymore. And you're scared to be called out as like, you know, the odd one out, like you said, and just be left out.
But it doesn't take just you as the person who feels uncomfortable to raise that point. So I had a really lovely moment in the coffee room a couple of weeks ago where there was conversation ongoing. It was like a little bit on the borderline. And one of the people having the conversation stopped and looked around and was like, oh, I don't actually know you very well. Are you okay with this? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. But that's lovely that someone has noticed that I'm here. I'm not a regular member of their staff, really. They don't know me very well. But they were checking that I am okay with that.
Yeah.
And that's also fine to just to reach out and say, is this still a comfortable environment? Are you still happy to have this conversation? And if not, we'll stop.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And I guess that's another key thing with being in the healthcare setting is how we're such a wide multidisciplinary team, you know, doctors, nurses, and lots of different people working together. And you will see different faces every day. Sure, you might have your kind of core team, someone you've known for 10 years, 15 years, yeah. You've worked together, and you kind of have, you've built your own relationship and rapport. But we have to be sensitive to, anyone else could be working with us at any point in time when we're delivering care or even just in admin or wherever it might be. And it shouldn't be something that is so difficult, because it's not about policing what you're saying. It's just about thinking about the impact of what you're saying, what it might be before you say it.
Well, that's the thing. That's very difficult for some people to understand, though. That they need to think before they...
And beyond that, they have to assess the impact. Have a look around. If somebody looks uncomfortable, then, you know, apologise and say, oh, sorry, I hadn't realised we've got a new member of the team in, around today. That was insensitive of me to say without, you know, whatever. But it's that awareness. It's that have a look around. You can see if people are uncomfortable, or and if one person's uncomfortable, it's likely more than one are going to be uncomfortable, if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. Even if they're kind of going, yeah, very funny.
Because they'll go outside the door and be like, you know, but a lot of people don't feel comfortable even speaking up, and I think that's the problem. And I also think another problem is people being held accountable. That's a big issue. And I think that's why the work is slow, because people are not being held accountable for their behavior.
That's the way they are.
That's the way they are.
It's no longer acceptable, but it is something that is used as an excuse. And it's barely even a reason, but it's certainly not an excuse for being inappropriate. But, you know, I've certainly worked in healthcare long enough to know many, many people who have been inappropriate, and you just get someone saying, oh, that's just so and so, it's just how they are.
Don't take it hard.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry.
It's better.
Yeah. Or you should be more offended if they don't do that to you.
That's the worst.
What? And I think it's also important to acknowledge at this point that it isn't necessarily a male perpetrator and a female victim. That it's really daunting for a young male doctor or nurse to go into an environment, of mostly female nurses, doctors, whoever, who I've heard theatre nurses be inappropriate to young junior male doctors. It's rarely as sexual innuendo as it might be the other way around, but you can still, you know, see that it makes people feel uncomfortable. And I think we have to acknowledge that that is equally an issue.
And I think with men, I think it's harder, because some people are like, well, it doesn't impact them that much. It does.
Yep.
And I think that needs to be drilled in, that just because they're male doesn't mean they can't feel uncomfortable about what you just said.
Yeah.
It might not be to an extent how males do it to females, but it's still sexual harassment.
Yeah. It doesn't change the definition of what's being said or what's being done. So it's absolutely. And just to flash on a little bit on that culture change, you know, we've mentioned about checking in with people who are with us, and just checking on their perception of safety, are they safe in this space that we are in this conversation that we're having? What other things can we do to kind of move towards that culture shift? I know we'll still talk about, you know, the reporting side of things, but in terms of just active things that we can do in our conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the training I went to yesterday was really interesting and didn't tell me anything in a lot of ways that I didn't know, that it has to come from the top down, that the senior people in any department have to set the tone. So what this training is looking at is getting people together as a department and saying, what is the culture we want in our workplace? We want people to feel safe and comfortable and happy at work. And it is up to more senior people, I think, to lead by example and also to call people out. I now call people out in a way that I would never have done when I was at my stage or at your stage in my training. I'm partly because, you know, it was a different time and things were, nobody did speak about it. It just was an accepted part of life. But also because I'm senior now, nobody's going to impact my career, you know, and I'm much more confident to do that and I do it. But it also, I think, more important than that is male allies.
That's so important.
Is men calling out men?
Mm-hmm.
When women aren't there, particularly in the locker room, on the WhatsApp group, you know, really? But, you know, what do you mean by that? And it's for male allies to do that because there is overwhelming evidence that, and again, we're going back to a male perpetrator and a female victim potentially, and which is more common, certainly. But there's a lot of evidence that men respect the opinion of other men and they don't respect the opinion of women. So it's the male allies are really important in changing the culture, I think.
Because if men are calling out men,
yeah,
then they know that, okay, I will not be invited into this circle anymore because of my thoughts.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to change my thinking.
Yeah.
And that's why it's very important for men to actually call out men.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be aggressive or formal. It doesn't have to be anything like that. It could just be like, well, thank you for crossing the line with that one. And that's it. That's all it has to be.
Yeah.
As an acknowledgement that I'm not sure what you have said is funny anymore. And that's it. Small changes.
I think it was Ramesh Ranganathan did, it was a mate campaign where you just go, mate, really?
Mm.
You know, it doesn't have to be confrontational. It can be something like that. Just to say, yeah, I know, that's too far. That's inappropriate.
And I think that would actually have an impact because then you know that you've lost respect.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And if, you know, a lot of these things are said because there's, if they aren't called out and it kind of reinforces that it's okay, you know, if it's just been continued and everyone just kind of watches it carry on. As you said, it can be in the, you know, face-to-face setting, but it can also be on virtual spaces as well. It would go a long way of people just taking that little bit to just step in and start to shift that culture in that way.
Mm. And realise that it is uncomfortable to do it. It's uncomfortable to call people out. It's uncomfortable to be that one who steps above the parapet and says, really? But that's okay. It's okay to feel uncomfortable. You know, and we're not good at that, particularly in this country. We're very reserved and we don't like feeling uncomfortable.
We are. It's a very British thing, isn't it?
Very British thing. We don't like speaking up and we don't like making a fuss. Mm. And we have to get over that for something like this. It's okay to feel uncomfortable.
Do you think the newer generation is more likely to implement this mate culture with, or just calling people out?
Oh, I think it's really difficult. I think we're unfortunately facing a society at the moment where there is the rise of like the alternative right, and misogyny is much more fierce in sort of social and on the internet. I like to think that it is making a difference in the workplace though, and people are more likely to say when they are uncomfortable and they're more likely to call people out in person, but it's trying to battle that in against everything else that's happening online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would like to think so. And I think, as Maya said, victims are perhaps more likely to report it or talk to someone or say something at the time. But yeah, I understand that there's a whole, you know, tranche of the internet with incels and all this kind of, yeah, it is, you know, this male loneliness epidemic that is being blamed on women. And actually, I don't think that's going to help.
Mm.
Whether it does externally in a workplace environment when other people are around is one thing, but we still have, situations where people are one-to-one and actually people then may, you know, perpetrators may well feel more confident to abuse people on a one-to-one if there's no one around to call them out.
I think that's because when you report it, I think the first thing that's asked about is what evidence do you have? I think that stops people from reporting it as well, because where are you going to get evidence from?
Yeah.
And you need to take the word of people and say that actually I felt uncomfortable.
Mm.
Well, yeah, because even when, you know, there's a lot of high profile cases in the media at the moment where there's overwhelming evidence and still the perpetrators are getting away with it. That poor girl in Canada with the hockey team, who they afterwards they forced her to sit and give a video on consent after, you know, however many guys had raped her. And still they have not been, as far as I'm aware, brought to justice.
It's just making them a victim over and over again.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And so I think, yeah, that's a whole other topic is talking, you know, speaking up and what good does it do? But it does do good.
So how can we report? How's reporting going on in the NHS at the moment?
There are various ways that you can report, and I think we're going to address that in more depth in another episode. But there are local ways you can report, and all the hospitals have Freedom to Speak Up Guardians, Freedom to Speak Up Champions at the NR Trust. You have your educational supervisors, your line managers, your college tutors, postgraduate dean. There's all sorts of people, or somebody senior who you know and trust. You can report to anyone, somebody senior who will know what to do with it then. And you might not want anything to do, you know, anything to go any further, and that's fine. But yeah, I think there actually are a lot of people who you can report to, both within and out with the department of the perpetrator. So you don't have to feel that you're talking to the best friend. You know, you can go to the Freedom to Speak Up Guardian, who is entirely neutral. And obviously, if it's serious, then there's the police. But you'd probably want to report that in-house first.
You know, sexual harassment is something that is still happening today. It is something that is still prevalent. Then there is a duty for all of us, you know, in healthcare to make a move towards shifting that culture and knowing what things we can do to call things out if they aren't quite right. And that is going to be contributing towards making those positive changes that we want to see. And as you've said, there are different avenues where we can go to if by chance it is something that has happened to us in terms of reporting. And we'll delve more into that in a future episode. Just before kind of we come to the close of this episode, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to talk about?
I was going to raise one point about people speaking up for themselves. And again, it doesn't have to be a confrontational way. It can be really, really little things like, oh, I don't know how to respond to that joke, or I don't know what to do with that comment. And I know it sounds daft, it makes yourself seem like you're the fool. Maybe there's something that I've missed, but it is enough to call someone out on their behavior and change the atmosphere in a room to be like, oh, maybe that wasn't funny. And it's all there has to be. It doesn't have to be big or dramatic. But even doing that can make such a massive difference to the world, like the impact around you.
That's very good, because sometimes it embarrasses them instead.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that would stop.
Yeah. It's definitely true that if somebody is forced to explain themselves or repeat it, they often backtrack.
It's almost like the sexual harassment.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. What did you say?
Yeah.
Say it again, please.
Sorry, yeah. I missed that. What was that?
Say it again.
Yeah.
I don't know you how know. To respond to that. Mm. Yeah.
You know, there is absolutely
ways.
Some non-confrontational ways. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think it is still ongoing in healthcare and beyond. It definitely is better than it was. Certainly, overtly, covertly, I don't know. But I think that can't stop us. The fact that it still exists can't stop us pushing. You know, the reality is we're never going to get rid of it, but we can make things better. And the majority of it can be, I think, addressed. The majority is low-level banter. People think they're making a joke and don't appreciate that it's not received. And questioning it and getting people who do that to look at them, you know, to just consider the impact, can often change how they behave. You know, a coffee and a chat approach is actually really effective. And this, as I say, hopefully this going into departments and say, what do you want the culture of your department to be? And how can you achieve that? I think is going to be really good.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of this episode. So in the next episode, we're going to be talking about a survey that you and Maya did, is it?
Oh, I'm taking no credit at all, Dr. Gay.
Yes. No, that was long enough ago that it was before Maya was here. Yeah. I did a survey at Dudley Group to see where we were and what the prevalence was of sexual harassment at work. So we can talk about that next time.
So I think we'll
delve
into that further in the
next
episode.
Looking forward to that episode. Thank you for everyone who's been listening and staying engaged with us. I'm sure, you know, you've picked up one or two things and things that you might be able to do and put into effect in your own department, or even evaluated yourself and how you engage with people. If you have any contributions or comments, feel free to engage with us on whatever platform you are listening on. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.